In July, researchers at King's College London told us about life-saving do-it-yourself cervical cancer checks. The team said the results of their trial, which used swabs for lab analysis, was a fantastic success. Chris Smith spoke to the study's author, Anita Lim, and she had this to say about it.
We know that cervical cancer is caused almost entirely by something called the human papillomavirus. And this is a virus that is very, very common. Most people in their lifetimes will have it, but in a really small proportion of people who have it, the infection will stick around and it will start to make changes on the cells of their cervix, which is the neck of the womb, that can develop into a precancerous lesion. And it's really easy to remove and treat those and prevent cervical cancer from even developing. And that's what we use screening for.
And so the argument would be that if you remove as many barriers as possible to a person getting screened, so you maximise the uptake, you're going to maximise the detection early and therefore get more pickup, more early intervention, more cure.
Exactly. The numbers of people who've been coming for cervical screening has been falling, and they've been falling for the last 20 years. And we know that a lot of the reason why people don't come for their cervical screening is because it's a really intimate test. So people, quite often, they might find it painful, or they might be worried about developing cancer, or they might just be feeling really embarrassed to have it. Some people are just busy. They plan on going to get their screening and they just don't get round to it. And then there's also simple things like people just not even realizing that they need to get screened. If you're not getting screened regularly, you're not getting that chance to go and pick up what is such a preventable cancer. And allowing people, giving people the choice and the convenience of being able to take a sample themselves in the privacy of their own homes, it's just completely game-changing for cervical screening as we currently know it.
What was the overriding question that you were hoping to probe with the study?
We wanted to see if self-sampling, if we did offer it to those people who weren't coming, how many more women could we actually get screened by offering them the opportunity to do that? We offered over 27,000 kits to people with a cervix, and we did this in two different ways. We offered it at GP practices, so we got GPs and nurses and healthcare practitioners to offer kits to women who were overdue for screening when they went into the GP practice for any reason. The other way that we got kits out to people is we mailed kits to people's homes directly. And what we found was that if you offer the kits at the GP practice, we found that 56% of people who hadn't come for their screening before would actually return a sample. And when you mail them to people's homes, that 13% of people would return a kit. And based on this data, what we estimate is that you could get over a million extra additional women screened if this was to be rolled out over England more widely over one screening round.
And based on what we know about the prevalence of human papillomavirus, HPV, that causes cervical cancer, and the number of cases of cervical cancer that are occurring, how many cancers do you think you can prevent with an intervention like this each year?
It's very difficult to actually estimate that number based on the type of study that we did. And one of the reasons for that is because this is a sort of cancer that develops over a 10-year period or so. So it's quite difficult to estimate based on the study that we did. But what we do know is that because screening is so protective against cervical cancer, we do know that by introducing something like this, it's very, very promising. It's very likely that we will be saving many lives.
One of the criticisms of self-sampling that doctors have raised in the past is whether or not you get adequate samples, whether people do it as well as a healthcare professional to get meaningful data. So were you finding that the samples that were coming back to you were good enough quality for you to give a negative or a positive that really meant something?
99 out of 100 women can take that self-sample correctly and that will take it accurately and that you can rely on the result. And then the other way to think about accuracy, and I think this is probably what you're trying to get at here, is around whenever you do a test, you're trying to pick up something. And the evidence for self-sampling is very, very robust. So the important things to know about this is that if you take a self-sample and your result is HPV negative, you can be just as reassured because that is just as accurate as the same result on a sample that would have been taken by your doctor or nurse. But if you take a self-sample and you test HPV positive. This is just a preliminary indicator, and you would need to have a follow-up test with your GP or nurse, which would be the conventional screening test. And this is just because you don't collect cells from the cervix as part of the self-sample test. And so you just need an additional step in order to tell you if you need to go and have additional tests with a gynecologist.
Does this suggest, based on what you're finding, that in fact our gold standard for initial screening should be to just invite women to self-screen and only escalate their cases when you pick up a positive along the lines that we've been discussing?
My personal view on this at the moment is that we aren't ready for that yet. Self-sampling isn't going to be for everyone. And what I would see for now or the next few years is certainly that we're going to see both tests alongside each other, and having the choice will allow us to really increase the uptake of screening participation.
That was Anita Lim of King's College London.